now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, once again, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, and welcome to the show where we interview legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. During the course of 40-plus years, while continuing to record, perform, and tour the world with The Tubes, 15 albums and world tours, Prairie Prince performed and recorded with many of his heroes and fellow artists alike and fulfilled many desires to execute various drum techniques in a wide variety of musical styles. In the early 70s, Prairie worked with legendary pianist Nicky Hopkins, recording two albums with musicians such as George Harrison, Mick Taylor, Ron Wood, Ray Cooper, and Klaus Voormann, among others. Prince started the band Journey with Neil Schon and Greg Rolie shortly after and recorded the demos that got them their first contract. Prince opted not to join the band on a permanent basis for his dedication in the Tubes. After session work with Tommy Bolin, Brewer and Shipley, and others in the 70s and the 80s, brought work with Chris Isaak, and he played drums on his first four LPs. The 90s brought live performances with Tom Waits. Prairie was the drummer on legendary King of the Surf guitar Dick Dale's three CDs. Then Prince became the full-time drummer for the reformed Jefferson Starship, featuring original members Paul Kantner, Marty Balin, Jack Cassidy, and Papa John Creech. After four CDs and several world tours, he bowed out as their full-time drummer in 1998, but continued to perform as their international gig drummer. In 2006, Prince toured with The New Cars, featuring Todd Rundgren as the lead singer, bassist Kasim Sultan, and original The Cars guitarist Elliot Easton, and keyboardist Greg Hawks. Prince continues to perform and tour with The Tubes and Todd Rundgren. Visual art has always been a huge component in Prairie's life. He's painted murals, designed stage sets, and has a thriving business creating custom finishes on drums, guitars, motorcycles, and vehicles. Early in his career, he teamed up with Michael Cotton, former Tubes member, to create Cotton Prints, an artistic design partnership. They combined their art expertise and worked with the Tubes choreographer Kenny Ortega to collaborate as the artistic team responsible for devising the production design and theatrical staging for the Tubes live shows and videos. They also designed the album covers and graphic design for the band. They also came up with a style and airbrush technique which allowed to design and paint some of the world's largest murals. One of their most famous murals was the Flying Records on the exterior of the A&M Records building in Hollywood, California. The mural's demise was mourned by many in the music community. Jerry Moss, founder of A&M Records, the destruction of the mural was documented in a 2012 NPR interview. Their artistic vision and ability to produce innovative and artistic projects led to working for the world's top live performers, high-end retailers, and companies around the world. Working with longtime collaborator Kenny Ortega, they created set and stage design for some of the world's biggest musical touring acts: Michael Jackson, Shania Twain, Bonnie Raitt, Gloria Estefan, Bette Midler, The Tubes, and Todd Rundgren. They also collaborated on the closing ceremonies of the 1996 Olympic Games and the Super Bowl 30 halftime show, starring Diana Ross, Michael Jackson's 1997 History Tour, and This Is It. Prince is also the artistic director of Mouthband, a company founded with Ross Fowlery, founding member and bassist of Journey. They've designed a line of shirts where graphic designs of jaws and teeth on the sleeves from a mouth when the wearer hugs themselves. And believe me, these are cool shirts. I've seen them, and I want one. Please welcome legendary drummer, accomplished painter, muralist, and graphic artist, Prairie Prince's Ray Shasho Show. Man, you've got some kind of resume there.
Thank you very much, Ray. I really appreciate all you remembering all that. You read it really well. I was taking notes to try to polish up on what I remembered of the last 50 years of that Renaissance kind of thing, doing drums and playing music and painting and designing and all those things that it says there in my resume. It's wonderful. Anyway, it's glad to be on your show. Thank you.
And I think anybody would hire you.
for something, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe not to cook, but I am a pretty good cook.
Maybe not to cook, huh? Well, first thing...
You're located down in Florida?
I'm in the Tampa Bay area, yes. The station's in California, so it's a... that's what's going on today for radio.
Yeah.
You know, terrestrial radio today is just, you know, dying. And, of course, you got satellite radio, which is still good and still going strong.
Well, but I'm glad you're still out there.
Yeah, I'm in it for you guys, you know, to keep you guys, in the limelight.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
You got which is interesting, I've interviewed a few guys that have been touring with several huge bands, and you're one of them. First, the Tubes. You got a show coming up, right, June 30th in Alameda County?
I do. We're playing the fabulous Alameda County Fair. We get to walk around with big turkey legs and cotton candy and talk with people that love to frequent this event. It's going to be pretty hot. I live in San Francisco, and it's cool and foggy in the summer. But if you drive 20 miles to the east, it's 30 to 40 degrees warmer.
Oh, really? Wow, that's a big change.
Hopefully I'll be ready for that. I think we're going to play outside, some stage outside. It should be fun.
Do you guys still do a lot of festivals?
We do some festivals here and there. The most recent thing we did was, for any sort of large audience, was we opened for Alice Cooper on his tour in England. We played like five arenas opening for Alice. And his... He got some of his own original band back together for part of his show, and they were, we all grew up with them in Phoenix, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
They were sort of our mentors. They were called the Spiders then, and then they became the Naz, and then they became Alice Cooper. But we were all friends from high school back in those days, and it was nice to, get back together with those guys and talk about old times and watch them play, and they really liked our performance as well. So that was a fun little collaboration we had there last fall.
Yeah, it's so cool that you guys, a lot of major bands knew each other from way back when in high school, and before anybody got really famous. It's pretty neat. It happens a lot too in New York with a lot of bands from New York.
Well, Todd Rundgren, was from Philadelphia, and he had a band called the Naz, and that's why Alice Cooper had to change their name from the Naz, which they were the Naz in Phoenix, to Alice Cooper, and they changed it because of Todd's band.
Yeah, I think Todd's band was a little bit more famous with the name
as the Naz. Yes.
Yeah.
Todd's
a good guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had Todd on the show.
Then all these years later, I'm playing with Todd again, and Alice Cooper is pretty cool.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. A couple of dates you got coming up with Todd. I never heard of him before. Todd Stock at Big Island, Virginia?
This is coming up. In fact, I'm leaving tomorrow morning for for Virginia. He's having, there's probably 600 or 700 fans have paid to come and sort of, it's sort of like a Burning Man vision that Todd has called Todd Stock. He had his first one on his 60th birthday 10 years ago in Hawaii, and then he had another one in New Orleans on his 65th birthday. And this is the third one, and he's going to have it in three phases. The first one's a week-long event in a place called Big Island, Virginia. And his whole band's coming, and all these fans, like I said, and You know, there's all these events, camping, hiking, river rafting, band jam camps, and I'm going to give some art lessons, a little art class, and, you know, it's going to be fun. Greg Hawks plays with the band now. He's from the Cars.
Right.
He's going to give ukulele lessons. He's amazing ukulele player. Chasm Sultan's going to give a songwriting class, and Jesse Jess, a guitar player, will give a... probably a guitar playing class, and I'm going to give a drum class, and maybe a drum circle on the solstice. So Todd's birthday's on the solstice.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun, and you get to be up close with all the artists, you know, and learn what they know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so that's the first week of his event, and then we go to Scotland in the middle of July and do another week at a castle called the Kilburn Castle and do another week of his birthday party there. And then then I'm going to go on tour with him doing a set called Todd Rundgren's Unpredictable, where he pulls out songs from the past that, you know, he doesn't really play that often and does sort of weird versions of them, maybe more acoustic-y kind of versions, or bossa nova-style versions of his songs, and then a selection of sort of his favorite music from the last 50 years of his era of, you know, listening to music. Anything from Tony Bennett to Monty Python to Arthur Brown to Weezer, you know, just a mixed bag of songs that he pulls out. And the reason it's called Unpredictable is because he has a song list of things, probably 60, 70 songs, and we're up there just waiting for him to pull out which song, whatever song he feels like at the moment. So it's always different every night. And it's pretty fun.
He's such an innovative guy, you know. I mean, you know, he when he goes out on tour, he never does the same thing. You know, he's got Utopia. They
just finished their tour. That was a reunion. They had they hadn't really played together in about 25 years or something like that. But people really seem to love that. I went and saw it here in San Francisco, and welcomed Willie Wilcox, his drummer for many years, who had been in sort of semi-retirement from actually drumming live for a long time. But he pulled it out, and he was great.
You know, I thought your name, Prairie Prince, was, you know, a complete, you know, like show name, you know, that you made up. But it's actually derived from your middle name, which is a French-based name, correct?
That's correct. The name is Lomprière. Part of my family that was from an island in the English Channel called Jersey.
Uh-huh.
And it was French-speaking and French inhabitants, but they were ruled by the English, so it was in the English Channel, close to France, but that's where my name came from. Charles Lomprière Prince Jr., and when my dad was a little boy, the old guy that took care of him and his brothers and sisters named him Prairie as a nickname for that little name, so it stuck with me.
Lomprière is such a cool name. I mean, you sound like an artist. You sound like a French artist, you know?
not a stage name, no.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's a great name.
Yeah, thank you. Well, you know, your name, Ray Shasho.
Shasho, the Ray Shasho Show.
Yeah, I know. That sounds like you made that up, too.
It's impossible to make that one up. It always reminds me, remember Susie Chapstick?
Yeah,
I'm
right.
Susie Chapstick.
That's right.
When you're touring with two huge bands like that, and you're on the road with both of them, do you ever get a little confused with, you know, two totally different set lists? And
I do.
I do.
I have to keep on top of it. You know, I have you know, sort of tempos in my mind and stuff that I have to keep. You know, I have to make notes. I have to make notes for sure. Mm-hmm. And I refer to my notes. I don't really read music per se. I mean, I can sort of read it, but I don't follow charts or anything like that. But I make up my own little kind of funny notes that only I could discern. And, you know, it's all right. You know, I go back and forth from the Tubes and Todd a lot. Todd's been working a lot these last these last 4 or 5 years, and it seems to have worked out. I have a couple subs that fill in for me, one named Trey Sabatelli, the other named Jonathan Mover. Jonathan Mover is a great drummer. He's an editor and publisher of a magazine called Drumhead, and he fills in for me if I can't make a tubes gig usually, and Trey has also filled in with for me for tubes gigs and with Todd Rundgren. He did a couple tours with Todd back in the late 90s maybe. But so far, lately, it's been working out, so I've been able to do both, and they haven't conflicted, so that's been good.
Yeah, hopefully you won't be on tour with Todd playing White Punks on Dope by accident.
It's funny because I think maybe about a year ago we did a double shift. The Tubes opened for Todd Rundgren, and I got
really?
To play in both bands, and he came out and with a bag over his head and sang White Punks with us.
That's cool.
He was like the unknown comic, but no, unknown musician. That was pretty funny. People go like, you know, they all knew it was Todd probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was a fun gig. I got to play for like 4 hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough. I had Todd on the show, and I've interviewed Todd before. He's such a great guy. You know, very down-to-earth guy. You know, talk
he
about
is.
Anything. And I've had Fee on the show as well. He's another nice guy. So, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Two great bands. Two fantastic bands. Was it Rick Wakeman that helped you guys get it? Like your first your contract with A&M, wasn't he involved somehow?
Who did you say, Rick Wakeman?
Yeah, Rick Wakeman.
Well, I know there was some kind of involvement. You know, I really don't remember that per se. He might have you know seen us play somewhere and recommended us to A&M Records. We had a couple different people that were big fans of ours before we got signed, and you know we were definitely an art rock band, so they had to convince. Yep. Jerry Moss and the people, Herb Albert, that this would probably be an interesting band to sign. It may not be the best, you know, money-making top 10 hit band, but it's going to be a cult band, and people will remember them for that.
Exactly.
It's funny. I had a meeting with Jerry Moss, you know, years later, and he said, you know, you guys ended up owing us so much money, but I would do it all over again. You're our favorite band, our little pet rock band, art rock band. And I thought, well, thanks, Jerry. You know, it probably still owes him $1 million.
Yeah, hope he doesn't want to start collecting on that.
No, I don't think he will. I don't think he will. He's a real super guy. And and Michael, I think you mentioned that Michael Cotton and I painted the big records on the outside
That's
of the
cool.
building, A&M Records, back in the before we got signed. And most of the people thought the Tubes were just a couple artists that painted a building, but then they heard our music. Yeah,
I saw the Tubes a long time ago in D.C. at the Warner Theater. You guys are awesome. I mean, this was when you were in your
Where was the Warner Theater?
In downtown Washington, D.C. I'm originally from the D.C. area.
Oh, Washington, right. I remember that.
Yeah. Yep. And you guys are incredible. I've seen Todd Rundgren many times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You live in Florida now, Tampa?
Yeah, I live in the Tampa Bay area. I've been down here now for about, I don't know, 15 years, I guess.
Yeah, you know who also lives there is Marty Dallin.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. He lives in Tampa. He's been down there for about 15 years too.
Well, we got Rick Derringer lives right down about a few miles from me, and Brian Johnson from AC/DC has got a house here.
Oh.
And Cheap Trick is I think in let's see, St. Pete, and guy from Aerosmith
is somewhere around there too.
Who's that?
I think Iggy Pop is around there somewhere.
Oh, is he really? I didn't know that. Huh.
Yeah. Just saw him on that Jonesy's Jukebox radio show, and he was saying that he and his wife bought a house down in Florida somewhere. I'm not sure where, but.
Yeah, good place to retire, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I love my San Francisco. You know, I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, in the desert, and so hot, and moved up to San Francisco in the late 60s, and it's still my favorite city. So
I like Tucson. I had my cousin used to live there, And we did the whole tour in Tucson, which was really cool. And we went out to Tombstone as well, which was really awesome. You know,
Tombstone,
to see all,
yeah.
And to see where all they made the cowboy pictures and things like that.
That's right.
Tombstone. I mean,
I have my Southwestern roots for sure. I love the artwork, and I love the whole history of the Southwest.
I've never seen so many cactus in all my life when I went there. It's incredible.
That's where the Saguaro National Forest is.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. I knew they had cactus, but not like that.
Yeah. And it's really the only place in the whole world that has it.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the world cactus.
A lot of them are huge. A lot of them are huge. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Fee actually started out.
What was that music that you played at the intro of your show?
That was some music that I picked out that we're allowed to pick out, with copyrights and everything. But I'll have to find out who actually does that. It's nobody, well known, but.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was a Tube song, and I was like, I don't recognize that song. Oh, well. Speaking of the Tubes, we finally are starting to record a new record.
Awesome.
It's been sort of in the works for about. Every tour we go, we've been working on a new record. It should be coming out soon. But,
right.
10 years later, we still haven't come out with it. But I think we've already got about 5 or 6 tracks, basic
awesome.
Tracks cut. And so I wanted to put that out there. I think we're going to, the working title is The Tubes Save the World.
Save the World. That's a good title. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So that's my plug for The Tubes.
Pete Waybill was a roadie. And before he became part of the Tubes, which was an interesting story as well.
Yep.
And the Tubes actually formed in, I guess it was 1972. And you guys opened for Led Zeppelin in 73. I guess Bill Graham was responsible for that.
That's true, yes.
And at first he wasn't real happy because you guys threw out everything at him. The cocaine, flour, pills.
You heard that whole story, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. But eventually, Bill Graham loved you guys. After that,
he did. He did love us. He forgave us for that. I mean, it was a mistake in the production of that day. We had just started. He had just started doing the character, the glam rock character,
right.
Which was sort of based on a combination of Rod Stewart and Rod Plant with Robert Plant, and his name was Rod Plant. And, it was the original Quaalude character, but he came out right from the get-go at the beginning of the show, rather than wait until the end of the show to come out. Which later, we realized, that character should be at the end of the show, and he does his nasty stuff, and then we get off stage. Anyway, we did it at the beginning of the show, and he threw a bunch of pills out to the audience that were candy, of course. And some powder that was supposed to be cocaine. We thought it was funny, but the audience did not think it was funny. And they just throwing stuff at us for the whole hour set we had. Opening for Led Zeppelin. And there was an outdoor concert at this place called Kezar Stadium, right in the middle of San Francisco.
Huh.
Legendary.
I think that's pretty cool.
A legendary show. I wish we had it on film.
I know.
I've seen a few stills from it, but nothing really documented on it, which is too bad.
Well, some of the biggest Tubes hits, Don't Touch Me There, which I love. That's Fee on the Motorcycle. And you guys had a couple of girls. Is it Ree Styles? Is that her name?
Ree Styles was actually my wife.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we didn't really officially get married, but we lived together for 25 years. And, we shared the stage. She was the...
I did not know that.
She was the rock and roll muse and sang Don't Touch Me There and the song called Prime Time that Todd produced for us. It was a duet. They were both duets with Fee. And Ree's still living here in San Francisco.
Is she? Yeah, I was going to ask you what she's doing nowadays.
Yeah, she doesn't do too much, but she's okay. Yeah.
Her name is actually Shirley Marie McLeod, right?
That's correct, Shirley Marie McLeod. And we came from Marie, short for Marie.
Right. And then you had Jane Dornacker.
Jane Dornacker,
which she passed away, which is very strange, in a helicopter. And that was actually, she had two incidents in a helicopter, and the second one actually killed her.
Was fatal, yes.
That's crazy.
And, that was the most bizarre thing. She was a traffic reporter.
Right.
She was a stand-up comedian, and some radio station in New York hired her to be the traffic reporter, but she was kind of with a kind of a comic twist. So she'd ride around this helicopter around Manhattan and give kind of funny commentary about what was going on with the traffic. She was an excellent swimmer. She came from the Bay Area, and she used to swim to Alcatraz and back in that cold water.
You're kidding me.
She was a very, very strong swimmer, and it was
the
most sad thing that the company, the helicopter company, just didn't take care of their helicopters. And the first time it went down, she actually saved the pilot who was drowning, got out, and then maybe a month and not 6 months within 6 months later it happened again, and they both drowned.
How bizarre is that?
A very, very, very sad event.
Wow. And,
we still have such fond memories of her. She was just an amazing, amazing woman, amazing artist and singer and piano player. She has this beautiful daughter that used to be in the tube shows when she was a little girl, named Naomi. And she, if Naomi's listening to this, hi Naomi, we love you. And she has a daughter named Summer, who would have been Jane's granddaughter, and she looks just like her.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah,
man.
They live here in the Bay Area.
And, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, Jane Dornacker was quite a talent. Yeah. Amazing.
How did you guys come up with ideas for the theatrics and mesh it with the music? I mean, that's kind of tough, in my opinion, anyway.
Well, it was just, it was just all the things that we were interested in, life.
Yeah.
I mean, strange living in San Francisco as well. Also, before that, growing up in Phoenix, isn't it? Strange culture, Southwestern culture, and sort of, the anti-Republican, we were trying to do anything we could to protest just the normal thing that was going on in the sort of conservative Southwest at that point. And being influenced by television and science fiction and just all kinds of things that we were interested in conglomerated into this big mess called the Tubes.
Yeah.
Then we moved to San Francisco and got the crazy things that were going on here in the late 60s and early 70s. And we just started doing like theatrical productions for each idea, creating characters with Fee Wavell, Dr. Strangelove and Cowboys, and I take off on Tom Jones, and then we had the choreographer Kenny, with dancers, and costumes and things like that. And so we just started creating these little scenarios around songs. And then it would go the other direction. We'd come up with a song and then try to illustrate it with all these things, and then we'd go the other direction and come up with just a crazy idea and then try to write a song around it.
You guys were successful. You were successful because you had a group of fantastic musicians. I mean, if you were mediocre musicians, it would be much harder to pull it off. But you guys were, everybody loved the music. And then it was just a plus to have the theatrics after that.
Well, some people think that was a detriment just because it took away from, it took people's attention away from the music as opposed to, adding to it. But we always just thought it was a great combination. And, great music, great musicians, and then this beautiful accompanying theatrical production around each song and throughout the whole show. And developing, video and things like that. That all kind of started just by the San Francisco light shows and enhancing a musical production just with some colors and some visuals and movies and different things like that.
So some of the antics were...
We took it into the realm of television more than anything else.
Yeah, you're right.
The innovators of the video presentation.
Right, exactly. Live MTV, pretty much.
exactly, yeah.
Some of the antics you guys did, Fee beating up a couple in the front row, which, of course, were planted during the crime medley, then taking off his disguise as the band launched into Mondo Bondage, and huge stack of kill amplifiers falling on Quaalude during the finale of White Punks on Dope.
Yeah, those things all kind of fit inside of each other. They stacked inside of each other. They were just hollow. hollow boxes. But it took up a lot of space in the truck, but it was such a great effect, we kept doing it. And actually, when we did the Michael Jackson tour, the history tour, we copied that idea. And he made a wall of amplifiers as well. It was just
really,
you know, like 12 times as big as the one that we ever had.
Yeah.
But it was the same concept. It didn't fall over on him, but it crashed down at some point. Yeah.
The most amplifiers I've ever seen stacked up was the Grateful Dead. When I saw
that.
Oh,
what was that called?
Oh,
the Godzilla, the Wall of Sound?
Yeah,
I couldn't believe it.
I said, what?
Yeah, I think that guy, Owsley, you know, the LSD manufacturer guy, Owsley Stanley, they called him the Bear. I think he designed that. Yeah.
And you know, you wouldn't expect the Grateful Dead to have, you know, need that many amplifiers, because they're not like AC/DC. You know, they don't pump out, you know, real loud noise. You know, they're not like that. But
I think they used it pretty tastefully, I think.
Right, exactly. They're a lot different. They're, you know, more refined rock kind of rock band, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, our keyboard player Vince Wilnick became a member of the Grateful Dead for the last bits of the before Jerry died.
Right. Yeah. Did you know Jerry?
I met him a few times with Vince. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice guy and artist. He went to the Art Institute, the same school I went to. Yeah, he went probably 10 or 15 years before I did, but.
Mm-hmm.
Well, legendary there.
White Punks on Dope was our battle cry at high school.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was...
WPOD.
Huge song, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, huge song.
I just met Jello Biafra, you know, from the Dead Kennedys recently.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Holy cow.
Yeah, he was a big Choose fan, and I didn't realize it. And I met him, and he goes, oh, yeah, man, we were the first White Punks on Dope here in the Sunset District in San Francisco. We used to write WPOD, spray it all over the sidewalks and stuff. And, you know, I just thought, wow, I didn't even realize that. But And then the guys from Green Day also gave us, you know, kudos for being, like, the first punk rock, you know, innovators in the Bay Area.
Oh, definitely.
Back in the day, and they were influenced by us. So.
Now, the Dead Kennedys, that brings back memories. Back in the late 70s, I was in broadcasting school in Lauderdale, and me and my friends were writing punk songs because they were fun, you know. So we were doing a lot of fun punk songs. I still have some, a repertoire of them, but some of them I just can't. I'd probably get in trouble if I recorded any of them.
Yeah, well, it never stopped the punks. Go ahead, do it.
One of them's awesome, but it's kind of it's called Abortion Babies. Can you imagine how much trouble we'd get in for that?
Oh, boy. Yeah, you might.
But it's a good song. it's a killer song. You guys, I want to tell the audience, if you want to see... Prairie Prince at his best. One of the videos you should see him doing a solo, a very cool drum solo on YouTube. It was at the Tubes Wild West show at Shepherd's Bush Empire in London, and
Lone Ranger mask, right? I'm wearing the Lone Ranger mask and a cowboy hat. Yep,
it's awesome, You were what a solo you did on that. I mean. You're an awesome drummer, man. You really are.
Well, thank you so much. And actually, it's I think that's on a CD.
Yeah,
and a DVD, I think. Besides YouTube, I think you can actually buy the product. With
good.
Solo on
yeah, we yeah. should. Everybody needs to buy product instead
yeah.
of downloading.
Yeah,
and
keep
all
buying
that
stuff. Don't get away from it. I mean, YouTube is great, but you know, go out and support your fam, your
yeah.
bands.
Well, YouTube is good for you know experimenting and saying, "Wow, I like that song. I'm going to go buy it." You know,
exactly.
like you went to a record store and they would play a record for you. To give you a little taste, you know. That's what YouTube is for, I think.
Yeah.
Now, did you design the album cover for the first Tubes album?
Michael Cotton and I did all of the album cover concepts.
Uh-huh.
We had help. We had help from some of the art directors, you know, at the record labels.
Right.
But yeah, we came up with concepts and you know went through all the preliminary ideas. You know, I had sketchbooks full of you know. Ideas that were tossed off and ideas that actually, you know, came to fruition. And the first idea was just some girl, like, trying to rip into that record to get to be able to listen to it as fast as she could. And the way that we came about presenting it was quite an ordeal. We decided we wanted to write the name in some kind of something that would come out of a tube, you know, some kind of a cream or something. We ended up using close-up toothpaste because it was clear and it was
really?
Red and cinnamon flavor. So we started writing the tubes on pieces of paper with
right.
toothpaste, and we ended up like, God, we're going to need a lot more of toothpaste because it's not looking so good, you know. We had to keep doing it until we got just the right ones. We used like 4 cases of close-up toothpaste to finally
oh,
get
man.
The one that we liked. And then we photographed it, printed it out, put it on a record cover, then had Ree get an incredible manicure and rip the actual photograph, and then re-photograph her ripping that. So that's how
wow.
that we built up that album cover, yeah.
You know, there are certain album covers that stick in your mind forever, and that's one of them.
That's
you
one
know?
Of them. That's a good
yeah.
one. And then I thought the other good one that we did was, which is the remote control with the baby in the
right,
baby
right.
chair watching
right.
the Hollywood Squares with a nipple on a round television. So that's the original boob tube.
Yeah, that's right.
The video.
I remember. You remember that movie?
The boob tube?
Yeah, the boob tube.
I don't know. What was it?
No. I think it was called the boob tube, yeah. It was a funny movie. It was really crazy. It's one of the first movies of its kind.
Huh.
Yeah.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. I want to. I know you've told this story a million times. I was a big fan of Journey, but only in the beginning. You know, because I like prog rock. I was a big fan of progressive rock.
Right.
And when Journey came out with Greg and Neil and Ross and Ainsley on drums,
yeah.
One of my favorite albums was Look Into the Future. But, you know, after they got commercial, I didn't, you know, that wasn't my thing.
Yeah.
I always liked the more underground type of bands. How did you guys got Journey signed to their first record label, correct?
Well, yeah, we did all the songs. I mean, they helped. We got together. The way the story started was Herbie Herbert, who was their manager. He worked for Santana. He and Neil and Greg Raleigh left Santana to mm-hmm. start a new project. His idea was a project called the Golden Gate Rhythm Section, and it was going to be mostly a band of sort of session guys or, you know, friends around the Bay Area that could get together and record music and play, but not really a band. He was managing the Tubes at the time, which I was already in.
Right.
He's the one that helped get us onto the Kezar Stadium gig with the opening for Led Zeppelin. But anyway, he kept saying, well, you know, I love the Tubes, but I want to start this new band called the Golden Gate Rhythm Section, and it's got Neil Sean and Greg Raleigh from Santana, who I've been working with. I've got Ross Valerie and George Sickner from a band in the East Bay called Philander Bandersnatch or something like that, which I hadn't heard of. But and I said, well, sure, I'd like to go in and start a recording project. And so we did, and we just all fell in love with each other, and we started working on writing songs. And long story short, we, over a course of, it seemed like about a year, maybe a year and a half, we wrote a bunch of songs together. Went into a studio called Wally Hyder's, which was back then very a very famous recording studio in downtown San Francisco, and we recorded all the songs that we had written. And those demos exist today, and that's what, you know, was played for the record company that ended up getting them their record deal. And then, of course, they went and re-recorded it with Ainsley, but those are all the songs that that I helped them write on that first record. I did one show with them opening for Santana. I think it was 1973 going into 74. And I have a recording of that as well, a great recording of that. And then the next day we went to Hawaii and opened and played for the Crater Festival with Bonnie and Delaney.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And so that's that. And then that was my history with Journey, really. I didn't really play with them after that because I was with my brothers from Phoenix, the Tubes, and we just had a different kind of direction in mind. And as much as I loved that prog rock and the Journey and just loved Ross and Neil so much, you know, playing with those guys because they were so powerful, I just decided to go with the Tubes instead. So that's the history of that story.
It's interesting how that band morphed into Journey commercially. It's kind of like
as soon as they finally got a sing guys that could sing and Steve Perry. Well, I mean, Greg Raleigh was a great singer, but he just was a different kind of singer. I guess they were looking for someone with a little more pop sensibility.
Right, right. They wanted to sell records.
they did that. They did that,
They sure did. Mm-hmm. The other band I'm very fascinated with that you were involved with was XTC.
Right. Actually, Todd Rundgren got me involved with those guys. Mm-hmm. He was asked to produce their album, Skylarking.
Skylarking, which is their ninth studio album, right?
We had actually played with XTC, the Tubes did, on Top of the Pops in England back in around 79. So we had all met each other, and I was a big XTC fan from the get-go.
Yep,
Their very first album, White Music, was just amazing, and I loved all that. I loved all their albums. So I was a huge fan, and when Todd got that job, he had just recorded the Tubes album, Love Bomb, with us. And he said, I got this project. You want to play drums on it? And I said, absolutely. So they started the record, Skylarking, at his studio in Woodstock. And then they brought they brought the whole thing out to the Tube studio in San Francisco. And I put the drums on there. And that's how that went down. That's great.
Yeah, Todd told me that it was either Andy or Colin was afraid of flying, and they created the Dukes of Stratosphere, you know, because they weren't going to be doing any touring.
Oh.
And the Dukes of Stratosphere, I mean, I think they put out a couple of albums, but have you heard those albums?
Oh, yeah, I love those records. In fact, I'm on one of them. They were outtakes from the Skylarking session.
Ended
up on the Dukes of Stratosphere. I think it was called My Little Lighthouse.
It's awesome band. I mean, very Beatle-ish, you know.
Super Beatle-y.
Yeah, those guys were very, very, very talented. Very talented.
Yeah, and then I got to play on another two of their records, 15 or 20 years later.
Really?
Called Apple Venus.
Yes.
And Wasp Star. So I played on both of those records. They hired me to come over to England, and we recorded it at a place called Chipping Norton Studios.
Apple Venus 1 and 2, right? They did a...
Well, it was originally supposed to be a double album, but then they ended up, you know, messing up there. Something happened, and they ended up having to put out two records.
Okay.
But yes, I played on both of them.
You were also on The Tin Man Was a Dreamer. Nicky Hopkins album.
That was one of my biggest claims to fame.
That's cool. George Harrison was on that. Klaus Voormann. Yeah.
Ray Cooper, Chris Stedding, Mick Taylor. He had a whole list of people that Ron Wood, he had a bunch of people that, you know, he was like the number one session player in England.
Yes, he was.
And
he was incredible.
He had played on so many people's records, Rolling Stones, Beatles, The Who, The Kinks, that when it came time for him to do a solo record, he reached out to them and everybody sort of came on board and helped him make his record. I met him here in San Francisco because he was playing with he had been playing with the Jefferson Airplane, and then he started playing with Quicksilver Messenger Service, David Freiberg and John Chaplin and those guys. So I had met him, and he called me up one day and said, "Do you want to be my drummer and come over and come over to England and do this record?" I went, "Yeah, I'm going." So, and at the same time, those Journey guys were trying to get me to go on. The Tubes were trying to get me to be with them. I was being pulled in all kinds of different directions at that early 70s. So. But I'm glad I ended up doing that because it's a great record and it's just classic. And, you know, God rest his soul, Nicky Hopkins was still one of my favorite rock piano players.
Did you hang out with George at all?
We did. We got to hang out a little bit. We went to Friar Park, and he was building a studio, and I showed him some of my designs of murals and stuff that I'd been working on in San Francisco, and he said, "Oh, I'd love to have some murals in my studio," and I did all these designs for him, and then I never went back. It never happened, but I still have the working studies for the George Harris and Friar Park studio murals.
Yeah.
Never happened. But, we got to hang out with him a little bit. Really super guy. I got to go to a session with Phil Spector, was producing his record. I think it was called, it was after the record after, what's the record that came out right after All Things Must Pass? I can't remember the name of it now, but had a hand on Material World. I think.
Oh, Material World. Yeah, that was a good album.
I think that was it. So I sat in on the sessions for that. It was Jim Keltner and Ringo, double drummers. Yep. Gary Wright and Nicky Hopkins playing keyboards, and Phil Spector producing. And it was, you know, Phil was like walking around the studio with a gun and pointing at the people, and George would say, "Phil, put the gun down. Put the gun down,
really?
Phil."
Huh?
Yeah.
Is that he was really like that, huh?
Yeah, apparently. I mean, I didn't get to know him or anything, but he was a pretty strange character.
Huh?
I didn't get it. I didn't get why George Harrison had that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he was an amazing producer. He produced a lot of incredible records, but he was also such a wacko. Wacko dude.
You know, about the same time you were on that album, The Tin Man Was a Dreamer, Cheech and Chong came out with Basketball Jones, and Nicky Hopkins was on that song, but I never realized how many people were on that song. George Harrison, Klaus Voormann, Jim Keltner, Carol King.
Oh, wow. It must have been right around the same time, the same session, guys.
It was about the same time. Billy Preston was on that. I mean, I didn't know that song. I mean, I love that. It's a funny song, and it's a good song. You can tell there's good musicians on there, but I didn't know, you know, that caliber.
Yeah. Wow. Well, they're classics. Cheech and Chong, they're amazing.
They are, man. Yeah, they are amazing.
Yeah.
You also work with...
I got to wrap this up pretty soon. Sorry. I have a meeting over in the East Bay, and I got to get over there. I'm over at the beach right now at my house, and I got to get all the way over to Oakland.
Well, a couple plugs for you. Mouthman, right? Is that your company?
Mouthman is Ross Valerie's company, actually, but I'm involved with that still.
You're involved with that?
Not as much as before, but we still have that company going, Mouthman.
It's on the internet, and people can find that. You got some great products on there, very interesting products.
Yeah,
you got the tours coming up for both bands. You got a new album coming out. When is that going to be released?
The Tubes record.
Yes.
You got me, but all I can say is it's going to hopefully be before 2020.
Before 2020.
Yeah. And I also have a solo project, my first solo project. It's called Prairie Prince's Colors and Passions.
Awesome.
And it's a percussion-based record.
Right.
That's going to hopefully include a lot of my celebrity musician friends, and as well as a lot of my drummer friends. Collaboration record, but it's based on the idea of colors and passions.
Awesome. We'll be looking out for that as well.
Which are my passion, color, painting.
Exactly. But you're such a talented guy, man. You do it all. You're a Renaissance man.
Thank you, Ray.
Thank you so much for being a guest today, and more importantly, for all the great music you've given us, and music you will continue to bring us. Thank you.
And I hope I can play the Tubes record and my record on your show someday.
Yes, you're always invited to come back on, and we'll play some new stuff.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Prairie. Take care, man.
Thank you so much, Ray. Yeah, and have a happy day.
You too. All the best.
Bye bye.
Bye bye now. For more information about Prairie Prince, visit www.prairieprince.com. Also, www.facebook.com/prairieprince with the Tubes, www.thetubes.com. And also with Todd Rundgren, www.toddrundgren.com. Very special thanks to Trace Keane for arranging this wonderful interview with Prairie Prince. And, of course, the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsome of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of the Ray Shasho Show. And if you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at theRayShashoShow@gmail.com. And please don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business. Or the second edition, entitled Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, Proud to be Politically Incorrect in Washington, D.C., available now at Amazon.com, and I promise you will live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to The Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at PublicityWorksAgency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on PBS Radio, Station 1.